Yo, what's up? It's Brandon from Money in the Bank Productions. Woo woo! And I am still in quarantine, like all of you are, and actually doing pretty good, you know, in all honesty, producing a bunch of content. We got In the Meme Time is up and running every Friday. Friday nights at 8 p.m. Central. We have it now both on Facebook and YouTube Live. So check out the Facebook page, Money in the Bank Productions. Also the YouTube channel, Money in the Bank Productions. Just search it on YouTube. You'll find us, subscribe. And we got the show going up there. And the reason I say this is because I had the wonderful Allison, and again, I won't attempt to pronounce her last name because I'm horrible at that. But she... And she introduces herself. But Allison was awesome. We're trying to get her on the first one that we ever did in the Meme Time because Carter is a big fan of her, loves her. And so I was like, all right, cool. And then she double booked when we did actually do the first one. And she and I was like, oh my God, someone double booked. Like I sometimes throw a little hissy fit about that shit. But it turned out great. Like we got her on. She showed up for the first one that we did quarantine style, and she killed it. She just absolutely crushed it. She was so close to winning the entire thing for that show. She's a savage when it comes to roasting. And we get into all of this. And the one thing that really stands out to me is that she's super duper smart. She really dissects the whole industry or the whole art form of stand-up comedy. And she puts in the work too. It's not just like dissecting it. It's actually putting in the work. And so we get into all of this, her upbringing. The interview is full of great stuff and meaty information that you can hear about. She went on tour. She's only been doing this actually less than 2 years, but she's been performing on stage in the form of, for you dirty mind people out there, she's been performing on stage in a theater because she was an actor, a theater actor before she got into stand-up comedy. So we get into her whole backstory, how she became such a good roaster, why she's such a savage, what she's doing with her current stand-up comedy. It's incredible. So check out the interview, give it a listen. And then I got some updates for you guys afterwards too. So stick around after the interview. Enjoy. All right, Allison, what's up? What's going on?
Hanging out, you know, not too many places to go right now.
I would attempt to say your last name, but first of all, I have a learning disability, which doesn't allow me to pronounce things very well. And then on top of it, so I probably just fuck it up. So, if you want to introduce your last name, feel free.
So you saying that you have a learning disability with the last name totally just made me think like Polacks have a spelling disability. Like my last name is so Polish. they just go consonant crazy.
I don't think it's
Polish. I don't think you have a learning disability. I just think we smashed a keyboard and that's how we spell our names. But it's Allison Voidovich.
Voidovich, okay.
Yeah.
All right. I should know that. I'm originally from Chicago, so there's a whole lot of Polish people there.
So many.
And but, you know, it's funny. I was talking to Carter Anderson, and he was like, you know, I think it's Swedish and like blah, blah, blah. I was like, dude, it looks Polish to me. And he's like, no, I don't think so. And so I'm glad you cleared that up.
It's very Polish, and like not only is it very Polish, it's also like we're the only family that spells it this way. Like it's apparently a pretty common last name in Poland, and the last three letters on mine are ECZ, and everyone else spells it ICZ, and I am convinced it's because my grandpa had bad handwriting, and they just didn't give a fuck when he came over, like from wherever, and so he like wrote it down and didn't dot the I or something, and they're like, oh, that's an E, and then he just was like, I didn't know how to spell this to begin with, so I guess it's an E, and like, that's it.
So, funny story with that is that I have another comedian from the Houston area, Jesse Saldana, and he was on the podcast a couple episodes ago. And he was telling me, he's like, it's just an immigrant thing. He's like, because his name is spelled Jesse with an I at the end. And I was like, and he's like, it's kind of unusual. And I was like, so like, was that because of this? Like I asked him where the reference was. And he's like,
it was, now he's named after my grandfather, but my mom said that, and when they were getting the birth certificate, the nurse wrote it, spelled it the wrong way, and she didn't want to correct him. So they just kept it with an I.
Yeah, it's crazy. And, you know, I think, like, I have convinced my dad, at least, that this is, that I'm right, because, like, I think it was like 3 generations ago. Like, we've been here a while. We just haven't lucked out. Like, the name has stayed somehow. We haven't Americanized. But my grandpa, like, worked in a leather mill. Like, that was his job in upstate New York. And when he interviewed for the job, the interviewer didn't give him the position because he was Polish. And so he went and legally changed his last name for 3 weeks to Adams. His last name was Adams for 3 weeks. He went to the same leather mill, had the same interviewer, got the job, and then he changed it back. And so I was like, when he changed it back, he must have had bad handwriting and just didn't care enough to, like, correct them. So I think I'm right.
I think you're right, too. That's funny. All right. So if anyone doesn't know you already, can you, like, tell us a little bit about yourself? Tell us, like, how did you get started in comedy?
Okay, so my main, like, performance background is in acting. I've been acting in just stage productions since 6th grade. And after college, like, I majored in theater, double majored in kinesiology. I'm crazy. And I graduated and I, like, hadn't gotten to perform in a couple of years. And so I was really kind of feeling that itch and, like, I needed to do it again. And I got cast in a company called Shit-Faced Shakespeare, who has a troupe in Austin and Boston. And we had a couple at the time, but now it's just those two. And I love Shakespeare. Like, my acting training is very classical. I like the old stuff. I like which sounds crazy now that I do comedy and I say whatever I want, but, like, I love Shakespeare. And when I got cast in it, I felt very uncomfortable with the improv side, because the whole goal is, we take one Shakespeare play, we cut it down to 1 hour and 6 actors, and we get one of the actors drunk, and the rest of the actors who are sober have to try and do the play with a drunk castmate who's basically allowed to fuck it up in any way they want as long as it's valid in the world of the play. Uh-huh. And I was so, like OCD about, no, we need to do our lines, we need to do this. Like, I just was super tight. And so I hated the idea of taking an improv class. Like, it just seemed like middle school theater games to me. I didn't want to do it, but I wanted to get better at on the fly stuff. And I was a huge fan of stand up and all that. And so I started just, like, creeping at the open mics in Austin to, like, see how it works. And Sam Castillo, who's an Austin comedian as well, he was a good friend of mine in college, and he saw me one day, and I had seen on Facebook he was doing it, and he saw me at a mic and was like, you're going to do this and you're going to like it and you're going to stick around. And I was like, cursed. No, don't make me do it. And I did it. I fell in love and I've been obsessed ever since. And now comedy is, like, my main performance gig, stand-up stuff. But
that's awesome. Yeah. Well, yeah. It's cool to see how, like, different people fall into it. Do you feel like, and I'm going to be biased, but I feel like your acting helps quite a bit. Your acting training helps quite a bit.
Totally. Like, with the stage presence, at least, like, that was a big thing that a lot of, like, seasoned comedians said. They were like, you're lucky that you already have experience handling mics and being on stage and being in front of people. But I still, like, nothing scares me more than doing stand-up. And I think part of it is because when you're acting, you do have that script to fall back on, and you have the excuse of, like, I get to ignore the audience. They're not in my reality up here, and I'm not being myself. So it's like, if you hate me, you probably just hate me because of the way I'm acting a character or the way the character is. You don't actually hate me. Whereas in stand-up, if I'm bombing, you hate me because I'm trying to be the most me as possible. And, you know, you have your jokes to fall back on, but that only works so much because it's a real-time interactive thing. So that was a huge learning curve that I would say is still my weak point, is just, like, crowd work and being okay with, like, still just kind of, because I'm like an animated person, you know, still trying to stay in that positive state if I'm bombing. But yeah, it definitely helped to be used to being in front of people already. But if, like, we're talking scary things I've done on stage. Like, I used to sing, I played cello, like, I acted. So I've done all this stuff on stage. all of those were coffee, and comedy is cocaine. Like, it's the scariness level is a whole different one.
Great analogy. So how long have you been doing comedy now for?
My 2-year birthday will be May 30th.
Awesome. Well, congratulations. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. So
I have to say, and I don't know if you've heard this around, but I've talked to other comedians locally who are, I'm going to put the light on, although I'm going to look kind of weird, but it was like I was too dark. But the comedians I've talked to that are super jealous of you because you've been doing such a short period of time and you've seemed to become so good at that. Do you ever hear that, or do you feel that from like other comedians in the area?
The Austin scene's kind of weird. Like, I love it to pieces, and I'm so thankful to like be from here. And I kind of classify any sort of comedy scene as having three types of comedians. There's like the people who love the local scene, they conquer the local scene, they get really fucking good at the local scene, but they don't necessarily ever want to leave it. Like, they and that's cool. You know, they have lives here. Like, I don't want to leave Austin. I get it. And then there's like the people who are located in the scene, like live in Austin, but they're road dogs. So a lot of people forget about them, and they're full-time working comedians. They might not necessarily be famous, but they're gone a lot.
Yeah.
And then there's the people who start in a scene like Austin that's good and competitive, but you have a lot of stage time. You get good yourself. And then once you're kind of at your top of the game, and the top of the city's game there, you leave to New York or LA to try and make it big. That's kind of like the three. And I feel like for me, I'm like straddled somewhere in all of them because I co-host a couple shows in town. So I'm around enough to be able to be well connected and do that. But my real job is mostly online. So I have the ability to go to other cities and like make connections there and have the potential to move there if I want. While still working and not, you know, losing all of my money. And then, I got to open for a tour, which I totally think was like, that blew my mind. And I knew there might be some, like, why is she getting to do this reaction to it. But as far as like interacting with people, I have not had any beef with anyone in the scene. I love the scene dearly. I know there are so many people who are way funnier than me, and I got lucky to open for this tour. But I'm also not going to turn down an opportunity like that just because I'm green. I'm going to jump into it just like I do with anything else, because clearly she wanted me for some reason, so I may as well take it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the funny thing is, so, well, not funny, but like, you are really good. And for being someone who's just 2 years into it, you obviously are leaps and bounds, but everyone comes into it differently, right? Like, some people might have some background in doing something like this. You with the acting, I think that puts you above a lot of other people because of, like you said, your stage presence and stage time that you've already had, that helps tremendously. Do you feel like, so the credits that you have though, and so also the funny thing is I've never seen you do stand-up. I've seen your name, I see you popped up. And then Carter was like, yo, we should get her on the show. And we've been talking about, because we've been trying to get, in the meantime, up for like months, like 6 months or longer. And then finally we got the first show. You weren't able to make it because you're too big of a presence now.
I double booked and I was so mad. That was the first time I've ever double booked, and I felt so bad.
It's all good.
I had been looking forward to that for so long. Shit.
And Carter was like, yo, she's going to be perfect. I was like, all right, cool. And then like that happened. I was like, all right, whatever. And then the funny thing is that we had another comedian who was going to come up, and he just kind of backed out of it 2 days before. And so he was like, this is not a good fit for me. And he's a little bit older too. So, but he's a friend of mine. So I was like, all right, I'm not going to hold it against you. And so, but the show turned out fine. And then when you came on the show this last time, you fucking killed it. And you were by far, I think, like, you and Ken really killed it. I think Courtney did a good job. Similarly, Courtney did a great job. He had a little bit of mic issues, so that kind of played into, like, not being hear him so well. But, I mean, you killed it, and you are a savage. Like, you were good at roasting people. Like, is that something you've always been, like, did you grow up in a family like that? Like how did you...
Totally. So, like, coming back to, like, getting good fast, like, definitely I had experience, and I still, like, I doubt myself all the time. Like, most of the time I go on a show and I'm like, I'm the worst person on this lineup, fuck, like, whatever. I wanted to disclose about that, that like I get so obsessed with things. So like when I first started stand up, I'm not kidding. I was going to at least one open mic every night, usually two or three. If there were two or three. So I was doing like 8 to 12 a week. I was going up, like I had Wednesday nights at the time. There were three that you could hit all in the same night. So I'd go to one, I would record it. I would probably bomb. It was all new material. I would listen to that recording on the way to the second one, rewrite the shit that didn't work, try it again, record that, and do the same thing on the third one. And by the third one, I had like 1 to 3 minutes of usable material. And so that's how I like made myself just get used to failing. And I just went every single night. And so you talk to someone who's like, oh, I've been doing it for 2 years, but what does that mean? Are they going once a week or are they going every single night? Because that the reps matter. You know, like if someone's been doing it for a year and they go once a week, that's 52 open mics. I had done that in a couple weeks. Yeah. So it's like, that also matters.
Yeah, you put in the work.
Yeah, and I've definitely been lazier about open mics, especially with the tour. I was just so tired when I was in town. I was basically just getting new material when I was hosting my shows. But back to the roast thing, my family is so savage. Like, I say a lot that like I am the least funny person in my family. I wish I could convince my brother to do stand up. I'm trying to talk him into a podcast with me because when the two of us get riffing, it's so like he's so funny. And my I was the only girl on my dad's side, like only girl grandchild. So it was like me and a bunch of boy cousins and then all of my uncles because it was my dad and all of his brothers. So like I was raised like a boy. They did not give me any like let up because I was a girl, you know, all that shit. So definitely family trained me for that. And I didn't want to admit that I was good at roasting for a while. And finally the other day, like my boyfriend heard my roast from Courtney's birthday party. And I didn't think those jokes were that good, but like people were screaming on that recording and I played it for my boyfriend and he was like, you need to just admit that roasting is like your strong point. Shit. So.
It is. I mean, it really, I haven't seen a full, you know, bit from or set from you, but that your roasting is on point. So let's talk about you. You brought this up a couple times. So you've gone on tour now and you've opened up, for a tour. How did all that happen?
So her name is Jennifer Fulweiler. She has a show on the Catholic channel on Sirius XM, which is great. She was raised atheist and she's got this huge like conversion story of like how she and her husband converted to Catholicism in their mid-20s. And that happened like in the blogger boom of like 2005 to 2012, somewhere in there where like she started a blog because she was atheist and just genuinely curious about different religions. And so she would like go on there and write all these questions and like go to religious websites and be like, I'm an atheist, please talk to me. I have questions about your religion. And somehow she just, you know, connected to people and now she's Catholic and she's like a personality in the world. If you're not Catholic, you don't realize how much of a network they have, but there are Catholic celebrities. I have so many famous priests following me on Twitter now. Like, it's so crazy, but I say that because she's based in Round Rock and I was at the Kick Butt open mic 1 month after I started comedy and I saw her sitting with a notebook and in my head, I was like, oh my gosh, female comedian. Like I never get to meet them. They're always booked on shows and they don't come to mics very much. Like, yes. And so I went to talk to her and she was like, I don't know what's happening. This is my first open mic ever. Help. And I was like, I am also 1 month in, but like, here's the logistics of how an open mic works at least. And we just kind of became friends and she made some comment about like, oh, I like Instagram. Let's connect on there. And I go on there and she's got like 30,000 followers. And I'm like, who the fuck did I just become friends with? And so we just, you know, exchanged numbers and we started writing together. And obviously she's already got a fan base and her brand in that niche is like already kind of comedic. So for her, it was kind of a natural jump. She does a lot of speaking gigs already. So she had the stage presence and she was even crazier than me about studying her stand-up. Like I'm talking, she had a spreadsheet of like all of the stand-up specials that she watched and she ran analyses of like how long they went between laughs on them. Like what are the most common denominators of a successful comedian, including like how much they change the tone of their voice or the cadence of their speaking or things like that. Wow. All this shit. And she just like, I mean, she has six kids, so she doesn't get to go to very many mics, but like, she would literally get the kids to sit down and watch her jokes and like all that stuff. And so she cranked out an hour of usable material that's like legitimately good jokes that her fans love in like 8 months, and told me she was going on tour at Funniest Person in Austin last April. And she saw my set, which didn't advance, but it was a strong set for me. And after that, she was like, I want you to be my opener. So she just basically like paid me per show and was like, here's your money, use it to get you to the show and keep whatever's left. And I was like, okay. And so I went to 10 or 12 cities with her, and it was kind of like lots of flying back and forth, because you know, she's got the family, so like we'd fly into a city for a weekend and come home so she could be with them. And so I kind of like kept my in-person jobs while I was here and like made that money when I was here, and then when I was gone I just didn't, and worked my digital jobs, and it was really crazy for a few months.
Sounds like, I mean, that's awesome. That's a great experience.
Yeah.
And yeah, you can definitely tell having six kids, she's got to be Catholic. So
I always joke she was meant to be Catholic, because the only reason she was born was because her mom's IUD failed. And then she had like, she cranked out two kids in 2 years, like before they converted. And I was like, you were destined to be yes. Catholic.
For sure. That's so funny. And it's crazy. So she didn't go to any open mics, but she just had a following, and she just pulled, she like basically like, she was a scientist when it came to like the whole
stand-up. Totally.
I always tell people, like, because it's funny, because when I talk to more and more people who would do this on a professional basis, I mean, there's a lot of science. And like you said, like, you put in the work, you got to understand it, you study the game, and you got to test out the stuff. And that's how people really make it. And Ron Jossel, who has been doing it for like 25 years, he kind of broke that down too. And but it's just crazy, though, to think that she broke it down to such a science that she didn't really have to worry about the art part of it, of actually going up there and performing, before she went up and actually put a tour together. I mean, that's just...
Yeah. Yeah, it's very interesting, and I can see how that could, like, piss off a lot of people, too. But in my opinion, like, because I've seen celebrities who do stand-up just because they have, like, a following, and she wasn't one of those. Like, her jokes were genuinely good, and she did go to mics. She usually went to Kick Butt or Velveeta Room, and actually, like, because the Velve open mic is so hard, that's the one that she prioritized, because she was like, I'm trying to do clean Catholic comedy that people in middle America are gonna like. She was like, if I can make people at the Velve laugh with these jokes, I know I'm ready to go on tour. And so, like, it was actually like kind of a cool little serendipity thing, I guess, like blessing before the tour started. Our first one was in South Dakota at the end of August of 2019. And I was hosting the Velve open mic, and she got on the list. And it was so cool, because I like brought her up, and then I saw her like crush for the first time at the Velve. Her and I both usually would bomb there. She crushed, and she got off, and I was like, oh my God. And I had a good like opening host set too. So we both just were like, great, we're ready to go to South Dakota next week. And it was like a good little blessing. So
absolutely. Yeah. That's so cool to hear that. So how was the tour like? With like, did you guys crush every single night, or how did that go?
It was, I mean, you know, there's definitely like, the crowd's going to be hotter because they're already fans of her. And I think that's true of any sort of famous person, right? If you have fans, they're just going to be more accepting of you. It was great experience for me, because obviously they don't know who I am. And she was pretty open about like, I booked this opener. She is not Catholic. You're still going to love her. Like, that's a thing too of, you know, if you're not Catholic, they're like, who is this person? So, but they were super warm crowds, like really kind. And even if they weren't like as expressive as we thought they would be, they were just like gushing over us at the end. So we weren't sure sometimes, like, if it was just because they were kind of like closed off people that just weren't used to going comedy shows. But like, even if I say it was like a quiet crowd, they were still laughing. It was just not like uproarious laughter. Like, a few of the cities were just, ah, you know, the whole time. And But yeah, overall, just very sweet people. There were lines to meet her after the show. So like that was crazy. And I just got to kind of experience that. And it was really, really fun.
I feel like that's like a premise of a joke though. Like I walked in a room full of Catholics and
there was one where like, I think I apologized for being Lutheran. Like I said a joke or something and it didn't work. And I was like, oh no, who told you guys I'm Lutheran? And that like made them laugh or something. And I think I made some joke about like, I like to say Lutherans get all of the rules of Catholics and none of the benefit of saints helping us out. You know, just you make jokes like that and they get it and it gets them back. So
that's awesome. So did you had to work on a whole set that was clean then?
I had like 10 like bar minutes, so like 12-ish theater minutes of clean comedy already, or jokes that were like the only reason they were dirty was because I cussed in them, so I just cut the cuss words. Yeah. And then I worked on a couple extra jokes that were just for the tour that were clean, that I thought that they might like, and I tweaked my set a little bit throughout the tour as I was coming up with new stuff. But yeah, she wanted me to have a clean 15 for a theater ready. And I usually did 12 to 15 and I was the MC as well. So I would go up and do like the announcements, and she wanted it to be a little bit more formal than a regular stand-up show. So like I would, you know, go up, do my set, bring on the feature. They would go, I would come back and like introduce Jen. And then at the end, I would come back out and thank the audience and all that stuff. Yeah, but it was fun and it was a really good challenge and it gets my brain, because like I just love wordplay jokes, and a lot of the time that just leads them to be darker or like grosser or not clean. And yeah. So kind of trying to stick to that style but keeping it clean was a fun challenge, and finding out what that kind of audience wants to listen to, you know. It was a good little challenge. But yeah, we were in theaters too, so I think our smallest crowd was in New York, and we had like 150 in there, but the rest of them were usually 300 plus. So we were in theaters, which is a whole new dynamic to learn as well.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. So what, this is a random question, but what's a nightmare that you have? Like what's like a nightmare situation? Like what's something you're afraid of? I don't want to say nightmare, because I asked that question once before and someone was like, this is my nightmare. And I was like, whoa, that's not where I wanted to go. And it was more like, my nightmare is like, I will never make it. And it's like, it was deep and it was thoughtful, but I'm like, are you afraid of something? Like, I'm afraid of rats. Like, I fucking hate rats. Like, what are you afraid of?
I would say, I mean, definitely not making it is like one, or not being able to sustain it, but that's just an ongoing fear. I mean, not to get too dark, but like that we're stuck in the coronavirus shit right now and like no one's allowed to perform. And I feel like I'm handling it fairly well because I'm still getting like virtual performance opportunities, and I've been helping to co-produce this like live dating show most nights of the week. So I'm hosting that, and like that's kind of getting me my fill for now. But just like being on in the meantime, and like how much we were making each other laugh, and I had already forgotten just hanging out with a bunch of comedians is so fun. And I haven't gotten to go to Mugshots in a month and do that. And like, shit, it's already been a month. And so I think right now the fear is like, we're going to have to basically isolate like this every year, and stand-up comedy is going to turn into kind of not really a career as much anymore because we can't have gatherings. That's the big one.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't see that happening, but that's a legit fear to have.
Though. Yeah, and I would say like on a more maybe like, because we have chronic and acute disease, so that's like a chronic fear. I would say acute fear is something drastic happening, like life things happening. Because this happened to Jen on our tour. Her father died unexpectedly the day of one of our shows.
Oh, geez.
And she found out like the night before our show, and she. She likes to get her hair blown out for a show, and she had like booked this hair appointment for us the day of, and I show up to the salon and she like does not look like herself. And I was like, are you okay? And she's like, my dad died, and just kind of said it like that. And I was like, we have a show tonight, like a sold out 500 person theater. We're in Atlanta right now. Like, what's going on? She was like, we're doing the show and we're not telling my kids and we're not telling anyone until this is over and my husband and I can sit down with all six of the kids and tell them in person. So let's just do it. And I was like, whoa, like that was like, holy shit. You just had a huge life event happen and it's like putting you right in the center of like, how do I manage these huge professional dreams and also still make sure that my family cup is full? Because she was, you know, like that, because family is very important to me too. So I think something like that is a big fear too, where it's like you're confronted with, what do you want more, your professionalism or your family? And how are you going to handle it when they're both screaming at you? Because that was a crazy situation.
It is crazy, man. It is crazy.
Yeah.
I can never imagine that, but yeah, that's insane. So, good fears, I guess, if there are such a thing, but,
I want to know, so you said rats, do you have anything, is that like the one that you would pick if someone asked you that question?
Yeah, so like, so it's funny, like if someone asked me that, it's rats, because like, honestly, so I've been an entrepreneur for my whole basically adult life, so I'm actually not afraid to fail at stuff, because I'm used to that, like I'm okay with not doing that. I think my biggest fear, actually, I would say, so something else is not making it. Like, my biggest fear is, like, I don't mind trying new things, but, like, not hitting that success level isn't necessarily, I don't know, actually, that's not a fear. I think it's just rats. Like, my wife calls me delusional, and I think I might be delusional. I might be, like, borderline too optimistic, borderline delusional optimistic, but, like, I always look at the brighter side of everything, and I try to do that in every situation. And there's always cases where I kind of have like mini freakouts, but it always, there's always the light at the end of the tunnel that I kind of see through it. So rats is my fear.
I would say that too. Like, I had to think about when you asked me that, cause I'm the same way. It's like, I might have a little anxiety like every once in a while, but it's just like, I'm the same as you. I've never had a real job. It's all just like shit that I've figured out how to do on my own. And so it's like, well, if I, this one doesn't work, I'll figure out another one. Like, yeah, it's fine.
You hustle, man. That's all you gotta do. Right. So what are you watching right now? Like, what, like, obviously we have a bunch of time on our hands. What do you watch?
This is going to be so lame. I'm literally doing like an online business course and that's like where my video stream time is going right now. But my boyfriend has been staying with us and he was like a film person. He's really into that. And so we started Parasite last night and I'm like, I told someone that today and they're like, how did you not finish it in one sitting? I'm like, it's like a 3-hour movie. My brother and his fiance were watching it with us. They got tired. We paused it. So I'm like 50 minutes left of Parasite. So right now it's more just clips of that, like, you know, watching a movie or doing things like that.
Parasite's a good one. It's perfect because, so it's funny, we had another friend who just watched Parasite too. I was like, oh, that's like the greatest movie to be watching during this period of time.
I know. I was like, well, like, because there's like multiple twists, right? Like, I would say about halfway through the movie, there's one twist. Uh-huh. And we got through that one. And where we paused it is right where my boyfriend was like, shit gets crazy here. And I was like, what are you talking about? It already got crazy. So I'm just
like, even crazier at the end.
For the spiral to like, he was like, let's just say there's some blood at the end. And I was like, oh, God. So yeah,
it's so I'm waiting. And it's funny that you mentioned that because I'm going to do a shameless plug, but we just did I posted a review from Uncle Bob. Bob, and I don't know how to pronounce his last name either. I'm going to have to figure that one out. But he just did a review on the blog for Parasite. So there's spoilers in there. So if you haven't seen it, you probably don't want to read it. But it actually is pretty fucking funny. It's like the funniest thing I could read about a movie that's not funny at all.
Okay, I need to have you send me that link. Like, I think we're gonna watch the rest of it tonight. So I'll like message you when it's time to send me that link.
Perfect.
Yeah. But okay. I would say, like, the last show, just the last one, was You. That's the one that I like, binged. It's just You, Y-O-U on Netflix. And yeah. it's fucking insane, too. But I watched it because Chris D'Elia is in the second season, and I am a shameless Chris D'Elia fan. He literally just plays himself, which is funny, but, like, whatever. So, yeah.
That's that so was the show. I didn't I think now I saw some of his posts because I found him on social media and all that stuff, and I saw him on there. You know what's funny is, like, have you ever seen the show? He did a show, Whitney, mm-hmm. Whitney Cummings, and he was, yeah. like, boyfriend or whatever, and that was the first time I ever knew who he was, and then I found out that Justin Bieber loved him, and I was like, ah, oh, I fucking hate him now, and then and then I saw some of his material. He was on, like, I think it was the roast of Justin Bieber, and he was pretty funny. It's dark shit, but it's pretty funny, and then I saw one of his specials. I'm like, man, this dude's actually really funny, and he's just gotten better. He's kind of, like, quirky, but
he's so quirky, and he's totally, like, you can tell he's got, like, severe anxiety and OCD, and he just handles it in, like, the most goofy character way, and, like, that's what I like about him. I've never seen him roast. I need to look that up, because a lot of his jokes are very loose and, like, personality-based and delivery-based, but I'd like to see him with some actual, like, written roast jokes. That'd be interesting.
It's funny. I think he did Justin Bieber, and he did someone else before that. But the Justin Bieber one was funny because he was on, I think it was Justin Bieber, but because Kevin Hart was hosting it. And then after Chris D'Elia got off, Kevin Hart just got out there and was like, God damn. He's like, what is wrong with you?
Chris D'Elia, the funniest thing about Chris D'Elia to me is that he has never been drunk. He has never touched any drugs. And he looks like the biggest crackhead, white guy. Yeah, but I would say, like, for roasts, the one that had me rolling was Tony Hinchcliffe roasting Snoop Dogg.
Yes.
He got,
he is so good at roasting people.
He is very good. I've seen him I go to Los Angeles fairly regularly, and anytime I'm there, I try to go to Roast Battle, and I also go to Kill Tony, and, like, seeing him at, like, Roast Battle in the Belly Room at the Comedy Store, it's midnight in the Comedy Store Belly Room. That is the darkest place for comedy you can go today, and nothing is off limits, and it, like, Tony is just so mean. You can see him sitting at the judges table too, just kind of watching, and when it's done, he just, like, grabs the mic, and he just, like, fires off shit about the people on stage, and I'm like, oh my god, how do you do that? It's so good.
So good. So, now we know, like, to go back, you started off 2 years ago, you're coming up on your 2 year anniversary, you've already gone on tour, you studied the shit out of it, you have a background in acting, this is, like, your full-time stage, present, or stay, like, where you get your stage time on, what's the future look like for you? What's your goals?
I mean, we're talking big dream here. I would love for comedy to be my main source of income. And I don't think, like I kind of already mentioned, I don't think it's ever, like, a reliable source of income. But I would love to be to the point where I have, like, a podcast that's, you know, got a good listenership and I have control over that. So at least I'm, you know, providing content in that way. I would love to be touring a lot more, and I keep mentioning my online real job. It's like digital marketing space things. So, like, I'm familiar with how all of the systems work. I've just never, like, implemented them on my own personal stuff until recently. So, full-time comedy, like touring, being a personality, just like, that sounds selfish, but I really do just like to bring joy to people. And that's kind of what I would want to do. And that's honestly a reason why I haven't started my own podcast yet, is because I want to create something that's fun for me and truly, like, fun and valuable for people who are listening. And so I've been, like, creeping on microphone shit for so long and just like, God, what is that thing I'm supposed to make? So, but yeah, long-term, I would love to just be able to podcast and meet cool people and do cool shows and, you know, just, like, promote the shit out of each other, because a rising tide raises all ships, you know, like, there's so many funny people. I'd love to, like, create a platform that, you know, celebrates them, and, you know, we can all just kind of have fun and make people laugh and do our thing. But for now I love what I do. Like, it's my real job. Everything I do for money is stuff that I like. So it's not not like I'm already in a bad place, you know, doing pretty well.
That's great though. I mean, that's awesome. And that's not selfish at all. I mean, like obviously bringing joy to people is a big thing and more so right now than anything else. But I think this opens up people's eyes of how much we need more of this type of stuff out there. And comedy is really important. And so that's awesome. Okay. So last question. Okay. This is a game. You probably played it before. It's called Would You Rather.
Oh God.
So would you rather eat Twinkies for a year straight or end up working in a gas station for the rest of your life?
Oh fuck. Twinkies, because it's over in a year. I can work the fat off. Like, man, that was literally you pinned on the fitness part of me. Like, I'm like, shit, those are so bad for you.
In all honesty, I had the Twinkie part written down because I knew your background. The other part, I had to just kind of make up, and I'm glad that worked out pretty well. So, because I've done a couple of these, obviously, and a few of them, they're always like, oh, that's so easy. I'm like, fuck, I need to step out of my game. So
you found my pain point.
Yes. All right. So let's, obviously, you're a very funny person. You got a lot of stuff going on. When everything clears up, you're going to be out there hitting the road and you're going to blow up. So where can everybody find you if they want to follow you, get more of your content? Where can they go?
Yeah, thank you. I am at Alliwo, Alliwo on Instagram. And then my Twitter and YouTube are The Alliwo, Thealliwo, because some bitch already stole Alliwo. So I am The Alliwo. That's me. The one with the crazy last name, as we've already established. So, and then, yeah, Alliwo.com is my website. That's where I put all my upcoming shows and kind of blog on there sometimes, but it's mostly just a show schedule and email list. I haven't really gotten into that yet, but you know, eventually.
So fantastic. Everybody go out, follow Allie, because she is super funny. She is a savage. She takes care of business when it comes down to the roasting side of things, and she's gonna blow the fuck up. So get on her now before you can't see her and you gotta pay, you know, hundreds of dollars tickets to go see her. So
you can still Venmo me at Alliwo hundreds of dollars just because you liked this episode too. So that's an option.
Do it. Send it right to her. All right. Well, thank you so much for jumping on. And I really appreciate it. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I super appreciate you having me on. Really, I like this a lot.
Wow, wow, wow. Yo, so was I not kidding when I said Allie just is amazing. Really, like, I loved how she broke down everything. And obviously there's some funny moments in there, some serious moments in there, and that's what life's all about, right? Like, everything's gonna be funny, but not everything's gonna be funny all the time. There are some serious moments, like when her friend on tour, you know, her parents or her father passed away unexpectedly. It just, you know, it happens. And but, you know, they were able to regroup and get back to it. And it's just so interesting. Like, there's so much to stand-up comedy that people just, like, average Joes just don't understand. Like, I have this where people come up to me and they're like, oh, and I tell them, like, yeah, I do comedy. I produce comedy shows. Like, oh, I love comedy. I've always wanted to do stand-up. How do I get on your shows? I said, well, go put in a bunch of work, write some jokes, go to open mics, and they're like, oh man, that sounds like too much work. Well, yeah, it is. It's not just fun and games. And this is funny too, because I saw this on Twitter. Someone was complaining about Fluffy, Gabriel Iglesias, and they were complaining because he wasn't doing anything like live stream, wasn't putting out any material. And people were like, come on, Fluffy, put out something, do a live stream, tell some jokes. And he's like, no, I'm not going to do that. He's like, I've seen people do it and it's just not good. And it's not, like, honestly, I've seen people do the live stream and there are some that are doing it on a weekly basis. And I get it. Like, people are, like, especially comedians are just really yearning to get back on the mic and get in front of a crowd. and it's bothering them to the, you know, being in the situation that they are where they can't do that. But the solution is not the talk to a room while you're sitting in an empty room. You know, talk to an audience while sitting in an empty room with no feedback. It's just hard. Like, there's so much to it that you have to get back. And so anyway, people were complaining. They were calling, you know, Fluffy that he was like, all he wanted was money. And I was like, dude, listen, you guys don't understand how much work these comedians put in to get to the point where they are making millions of dollars a year because they're selling out arenas and they're touring all over the place and they're doing what they're doing. But all that that's led up to that is a big part of it. And so you got to really understand, and this is part of the reason why I love doing the interviews, is that people get to see a behind the curtains kind of point of view from stand-up comedians, seeing what they do, what work they put into it, where they're going at. And, you know, some of the most of the interviews so far haven't been like super established comedians. Allison has obviously been on tour. I have actually an interview coming up with Ron Jossel, he's been headlining for 25 years. You know, completely different perspective on things, but he talks about the same stuff. Like, you have to put in the work, and this is what people don't think or what they don't see. They come up to you and they tell a stand-up comedian, oh, you do stand-up, tell me a joke. It doesn't work that way. sure, they could pull out like some like random knock-knock joke or whatever it is, or a chick across the road kind of joke. But, you know, to tell a joke, there has to be context, there has to be build up, and the energy of a crowd plays in a big part of it. So I just loved everything that Allison said. I got to actually listen to the interview multiple times now. It's been like three times between the editing and everything and just taking on notes so I can put all this stuff together. Obviously with podcasts, same thing with stand-up comedian. There's a lot of work that goes behind the scenes that people don't realize. So it's great though. And I loved Allison and everything she had to do. So if you haven't checked out the In the Meantime, go to the first episode with Allison on there is on there. And there's a few clips too. She does something, and this is something that I did not get to bring up, and I should have, but she had this whole thing where she's a trendsetter. If you go check out her Instagram page, she has this up there too, where she actually invented the woman jerk off motion. You know how for guys who are like, we just like, you know, stroke it and like throw it up. But she came up with the woman's version of the jerk off motion. So go check out that clip. Go on the YouTube channel, subscribe, because we're going live every Friday night. And we got a bunch of other material coming up, like this interview. I have the video version of it up there as well. So you can see us talking and chatting. And I got other stuff up there. So go check that out. Also, go to the website. Go to go to www.moneyinthebankpresents.com. And we have a bunch of new material up there. I have some reviews on shows and movies and some stuff on Netflix, as well as the podcast that we have up there. We have video clips. We have In the Meantime up there as well. So you can go on there and check. Everything is all in one place. That's what I would say, recommend starting there. And then you can always expand, subscribe to the YouTube channel, subscribe to the podcast if you haven't done that yet. If you have, thank you so much. I appreciate you. And if you haven't, I still appreciate you. And just go ahead and subscribe if you like this stuff. We got plenty more material coming out. I got some other podcasts that are coming out as well. And so we're just keeping the material coming. And we're really expanding the brand. Like, I have a team now that we've put together we're growing this. We're actually going to be changing the name. Money in the Bank will still be there from the production standpoint for like live shows, but we're creating an overall brand for the what we're looking to do, because I decided to pivot a little bit, and I'll create an episode where I talk about that as well, to get into some detail. But we got a lot of big things coming. So first of all, go check out the website first and foremost, see what's going on over there, and then make sure you chime in on Friday nights at 8 p.m. Central Time to Facebook or YouTube to watch In the Meantime, and you can see people like Allison on there who are creating funny ass memes, and we shared afterwards, so you guys can go ahead and share it with everybody as well. So a lot of good stuff on there, a lot of great material. Make sure you go there, subscribe, And if you want to get all this stuff, if you don't even want to go to the website, that's perfectly fine. Like, I'm okay with that. But if you want me to send you stuff directly so you don't have to go and look for it and you want to get a bunch of funny shit, subscribe to our text messaging thread that we have going on. It's all about funny shit. It's hilarious. We've got a bunch of great content. We'll be sending out memes and videos. We won't be flooding your text messaging inbox either. So it'll be like a couple messages per week. You'll get some reminders of content that's coming out, also some links to direct stuff, and then also just really direct things coming to you, like the memes and the videos. So you don't have to go around searching on the internet. We're going to be giving you the shit directly to your phone. Door-to-door service. What is up? Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. All right, so to make sure to do that, though, I forgot not even to give you the information to do it. So to do it, go text message the word funny ASF, funny ASF all together, funny ASF together to 31996. That's where you can text. So text message us to 31996. Text message the keyword funny as F, and we will get you all that stuff. You'll get a message directly, and it's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to be great shit. Won't be overwhelming, but at the same time, it'll be just the right amount of shit to keep you laughing your ass off and showing your friends and telling all your friends to do the same thing, and you should tell them to do that. All right, I appreciate you guys so much. Next interview is coming up very shortly. I got Hunter Duncan on deck. Another funny motherfucker that was on the second episode of the physical distancing edition of In the Meantime. So if you want to see a lot of funny fucking people, go subscribe to or go follow us on YouTube or on Facebook to get the live every Friday night, 8 p.m. Central Time. All right. I'll see you guys over there. All right. Deuces.